Welcome to the Empowering Agency Workers, a podcast for all temporary workers. If you're unsure of your rights, unsure how to find work, or just plain unsure, we're here to help. It's all too easy to be exploited, so your expert host, Julia Kermode, will empower you to succeed.
Welcome to today's podcast. I'm delighted to have with me Tom Wallace, who is from WTT Consulting, which is a tax advisory firm. And today we're going to talk a bit around non-compliant umbrellas. So last time we spoke about what a compliant umbrella looks like, and we're going to talk about some of the schemes that are around and some loan schemes and that sort of thing. So first of all, welcome, Tom. Thank you so much for joining me today. Could you give a brief introduction about yourself, please?
Thank you, Julia. It's great to have the invite. As Julia said, I'm Director of Tax Investigations at WTT Consulting. We are a tax advisory who has particularly specialised in contractors and, unfortunately, contractors who have, through no fault of their own, majority of time, been caught in what the HMRC would term tax avoidance arrangements, very much trying to help and unwind those situations. So, unfortunately, I have vast experience of umbrellas, and particularly umbrellas not compliant. And with a bit of luck, I can share some of that with you and make sure that you don't go down the wrong path as well.
Brilliant. And we were just chatting before we kind of hit record, weren't we? And one of the things that I really like about your firm actually is that you were set up entirely to support contractors and to bring something a bit different, weren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when WTT was set up, the founders were very conscious that the advice that contractors were relying on, particularly in the tax space, was what we would now call disqualified advice. That's because it's advice from people who are promoting or arranging tax avoidance schemes. And the problem with that is clearly there's a conflict of interest. The sole motivation for the promoters is to keep you in the arrangement and keep generating fees for them, regardless of tax liability that's being built up. And we've seen it time and time again that, you know, they then disappear and set up a new company and start all over again, leaving the contractor to suffer the wrath of HMRC. Rightly or wrongly. So it's always been focused on giving impartial advice, and it's what we will always do. And we, like I said to you when we were chatting, we won't always tell you what you want to hear, but we'll tell you what you need to hear.
Brilliant. And that's perfect, isn't it? Because we do sometimes need to be told things that we don't want to hear. And so it's good to have that kind of moral background, if you like, to the firm. So I'm just going to start off with a very quick reminder for listeners if they didn't listen to the last episode, although obviously they'll have listened to all of them avidly until now, but about what a compliant umbrella looks like. And just by way of an extra bit of introduction, I suppose, to the subject, in terms of you will typically have a recruitment agency in the supply chain and then potentially an umbrella intermediary that pays the worker. So what is important about knowing whether that umbrella that is paying the worker is compliant?
I mean, from my point of view, the most important is that they are not paying you any amounts of money that are not taxed. The bottom line is that everything that you receive should be showing on your payslip and should be subject to tax and national insurance. There might be some expenses or something like that, but mm-hmm. by and large, everything, you shouldn't be receiving any payments that are, you're told that, you know, these are not taxable for any reason. And I'm sure we'll get into some of that a bit later on. But for me, if you're picking an umbrella purely because it's offering some ridiculously high take-home rate that others are not, that is an umbrella that is not compliant. And unfortunately, it's a lot easier to point at what's not compliant than what is compliant.
Yeah.
But if they're trying to sell you on take home, I would say that's certainly something to be skeptical of. You should be looking at customer service, mm-hmm. Speed of payment, all of those sorts of things that differentiates them from other umbrellas that are offering you the same take home.
Yeah. Yeah. So broadly, a compliant umbrella will broadly offer the same take home pay. So if you're looking at comparing umbrellas at about the same pay level, then they're probably all operating the same way, hopefully through PAYE.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're seeing, let's say a normal basic rate taxpayer, and you're seeing an umbrella that's offering you, mid 60% mm-hmm. kind of take home, you're probably in the compliant area.
Yeah.
And what you compare it to should be offering around the same. Some will have a different fee structure, but you're not going to be a million miles out. If you're then comparing that to something that's offering 75% plus, clearly that means something is not being taxed.
Yeah.
So that's when you start getting into the non-compliant end. And we can talk later about how they do that.
Yeah, absolutely. And then just before we get into these less good types of providers out there, one thing I always like to tell people is that that you can check your tax record with HMRC really, really easily. And once you've done it once, if you've then got kind of your personal tax account, I think they call it, set up, then you can then check, even once you've changed umbrellas, you can just check that your PAYE records are look correct at HMRC. Yeah. I am right about that, aren't I?
Absolutely. I mean, years ago, what happened is basically all your deductions would be made during the year, and then at the end of the year, the employer would make a return, and that would be the first time that HMRC ever kind of knew what you were earning, yeah, what had been deducted, and whether there'd been an underpayment of tax. Now they have real-time information, RTI. Yeah. Basically means your employer submits monthly returns that says, this is the tax, this is the deductions, and therefore you can see whether that matches what's on your payslip. As you say, the beauty of that, log into your personal tax account, you can see up-to-date pay and tax information. And if that isn't matching what's on your payslip, it's time to start asking some questions before it gets worse.
Okay, great. So then that leads us into kind of what the schemes are, and you've already mentioned that you know, any kind of payment scheme that is potentially not 100% paying through PAYE through tax is likely to be not compliant. Can you outline a bit more about what those sorts of schemes are, and maybe how they work, and how people might be able to identify them?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's important to note that these schemes are not new. They've been going on early 2000s, probably mass market type of arrangements. And we could do a whole other podcast on how that's been allowed to happen. But but let's leave that for another day, Julia. ultimately, in the early days, it was all based on loans. Now, we all know loans are not taxable. You take a loan from the bank, you take a mortgage, you're not being taxed on that as income because you have to repay it.
Yeah.
So they devised these schemes that would create artificially two payments. One would be a payment that was taxed, and one would be a payment that was not taxed because it was classed as a loan. And normally there'd be a bit of a nudge, wink, wink, don't worry, it's backed by a loan agreement, but you'll never have to pay this back type of thing.
Mm.
And we're not here to moralise why people would enter such those arrangements. I think anyone in this industry knows that certain agencies promoted them, certain end clients encouraged their use, because there was advantages to it and probably some incentives as well going around. So that's how people can get caught up in it. It's a bit of a myth to think that people deliberately went out to find these tax avoidance schemes. They found them in most cases. Loans have been the preferred. Now we know loans is a bad word in the umbrella. Most people say don't enter a loan scheme, and quite right, don't enter a loan scheme. But what that means is that essentially the promoters have started trying to find new and ingenious word to replace loan. I looked at a scheme the other day that was being presented to a client, and it said, you know, part of your payment goes into a bonus pot, and you might get a bonus in 30 years, which might be taxable. But in the meantime, we'll advance you some money against that future bonus.
Okay, yes.
Now, does that sound like a loan to you, Julia?
Well, it certainly doesn't sound what I would expect if I was being paid, no.
Absolutely. I mean, fiduciary receipts, share options, bursaries, training expenses, all sorts of new and wonderful explanations for this non-taxable payment. But that's the key in all of this. You are receiving something that is in the words of the promoter, non-taxable.
Yeah.
And you have to ask yourself seriously whether it passes the sniff test. Does this actually seem like this is something that HMRC would be okay with? And in the vast majority of cases, the answer is no.
And I recall actually when you were saying then about the industry now knows that the word loan is not necessarily the best word to use because people are picking up on it. And I'm sure HMRC issued what they call a spotlight, which is essentially guidance, that said, even if you don't call it a loan, if it looks like a loan, it is a loan, and therefore it is caught by, and this was in relation to the loan charge, I think, which is probably something we'll come on to. So even HMRC know that people are calling these schemes not loan schemes, but it doesn't mean that they aren't a loan scheme.
Absolutely. And I kind of made a joke in the office not so long ago that the way to devise a scheme now is just work backwards, find a new name for a loan and work backwards from there.
Yeah.
But it's not a joke because that is literally what they're doing. And I would argue that actually probably in most cases, crossing over from what could be called avoidance to out and out fraud and evasion. By the way, they're selling the schemes. I we were speaking before, and I know we've both listened to one of the recent BBC Moneybox programmes, but it was very, very illustrative of the type of sales pitch that's given. And, you know, they are good salesmen. They are. That's the problem.
Yeah, and what I'll do for our listeners is I'll put a link to that Moneybox program on the notes that go with this episode, because it is really well worth listening. It is hard going at some points because of the impact on people who have been affected by these loan schemes, but it is well worth a listen. And actually, just on that as well, in the next episode, I'll be talking to somebody who has been directly affected by the financial impact of these loan schemes themselves. And so we'll be bringing it to life as well through this podcast. But definitely that Moneybox one is well worth a listen as well. So how would somebody identify if they're potentially in some sort of loan scheme?
There's a lot of red flags in this. We've already talked about the, you know, we're calling something something that might not be strictly taxable, but the reality is, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, it's something else. Sometimes that's enough. Other times there will be other classic hallmarks. QC opinion is used quite readily. So that's a kind of acknowledgement that says, we know we're doing something that HMRC won't be happy with, but they can't touch us because a top QC has said that this is the right side of the law.
What is a QC? Sorry to interrupt you, but just for...
Queen's Counsel is a senior barrister. So it's someone who would be well-versed in tax law, who has being asked a question and formed an opinion based on that question. And to an extent, that becomes part of the problem in that, Julia, because it's not your opinion. You've not asked the question, you've not engaged a barrister, and you're not entitled to rely on it. And B, you don't know what the question was that was asked. So, you know, you ask any question in the right way, you can get the right answer. So it's not something that the contractor or the worker should rely on, because it's not their opinion. Okay. The other one that was used was HMRC approved. Now,
yes,
that
a lot, and there's no such thing, is there?
Correct. HMRC don't give their seal of approval to anything. What that really meant was that we have a reference number under what is called DOTUS. Now, DOTUS is Disclosure of Tax Avoidance Schemes. Now, that was a system that was brought in that basically said, if you are devising avoidance schemes, you need to tell HMRC, and we'll give you a number, and you put that number on your tax return, and that means we can identify everyone that's used the scheme and challenge its use. Now, the clever marketing people realised that that might not be such a good tool to promote our scheme, saying we've registered it under the Disclosure of Tax Avoidance Scheme regulations. Yeah. So how should we phrase that? Let's tell them it's HMRC approved. And here's the reference number to put on your tax return to prove it.
Right.
It's
not funny though, is it? I mean,
it's only hindsight that allows us to go back and say, do you know what? And or being in the profession and knowing and saying, do you know what? You know, clearly they were lying. But to anyone else who's got no knowledge of this, why would you not believe it? It's a plausible explanation. We've already said anything that's offering you 75 plus take home percentage wise is almost certainly leaving something out from being taxed. IR 35 compliant is another one. I mean, an umbrella will always be IR 35 compliant. You're not working as an intermediary, and therefore, you know, you've got no concerns there. And the classic, you know, they're based offshore, or you're receiving a payment from offshore. The classic jurisdictions of the Isle of Man, Jersey, all of those very much have been the home to umbrellas that are not compliant over the years.
Okay, and just on that, is it possible that some of the schemes would provide you with what looks like a genuine pay slip, but then in reality might be doing something different? Or would we expect your pay slip to show two different payments, one that's taxable and one that's something else? What does it look like in that kind of physical sense?
Yeah, in general, you will receive two different payments to distinguish the taxable and the non-taxable. So the pay slip might reflect it. It might say you've had some sort of advance, or it might say you've had some sort of loan, or you've received some other payment that hasn't had tax taken off of it. Or it might just be that your bank account received two separate payments, and you receive one payment that very much reflects what's on your pay slip, and then this other payment that... Don't worry, this is the non-taxable element. So, absolutely hallmarks again to look out for. If something like that is happening, you have to ask yourself, what's a reasonable explanation for that?
Yeah, and I don't know if people do check their bank statements or not as a general kind of rule. I always check mine, but if you're one of the people out there that doesn't check your bank statements, then you really need to, because you need to make sure you're not getting two payments essentially.
I'd encourage that just to make sure that, you know, you are receiving one payment and it's reflective of what is on your payslip.
Okay, great. And if someone listening thinks that they might be involved in some sort of a scheme, and what should they do? I mean, what are the practical steps? Presumably leave that scheme as soon as possible, but what else?
I mean, I think first and foremost, we said it at the beginning, invariably, when you question it with the provider, they will tell you that everything's okay and, you know, they're not doing anything wrong. It's all fine. Seek independent advice is clearly the first thing. If you believe that the explanation you're being given doesn't quite ring true, it is worth seeking. For instance, I will happily speak to anyone, give a free 30 minutes and give my view on what it is. That is never a problem. The next thing is, as you say, leave and find find a compliant umbrella, because unfortunately what does happen is that these schemes operate for 12 months, sometimes a bit more, sometimes a bit less, but then they liquidate and they start a new scheme. But what that means is that they leave that liability behind, and it's HMRC going to be coming chasing the worker for the tax that they believe is due and payable on it. So it does no good to let that store and build up. The sooner you get out, the better position you're in.
Yeah. And I think then in that case, the sooner you can face whatever the problem might be. So in that situation, if there is tax owed, does that individual ultimately end up needing to pay the tax that they thought had been taken from their income?
I mean, we could get into a lot of technicalities around that. I think the short answer I would give is that the revenue will come looking from the worker. That will be their port of call, and you will end up in very expensive litigation, which, quite honestly, adds and compounds the issue, because you have to then engage in a tax advisor and sort of thing. So, as I say, the sooner you get out, and then you can think about a strategy of how you deal with the tax position.
Okay. And then in terms of that kind of strategy, would the individual, I mean, presumably they've sought advice from a firm, but would they also then be thinking that they need to inform HMRC of their situation, or is that something really that they need to get advice on for their specific situation?
I think it's very fact dependent. Ultimately, they may want to inform HMRC for two reasons. A, they have a tax position that they need to resolve, and B, perhaps they would encourage HMRC not to allow that company to shut down, and HMRC to challenge that company for tax that has not been paid. So the quicker you can start that process, the more chance you've got of these companies not being able just to disappear and reopen again, Phoenix again, in a new variety a couple of days later.
Yeah, and that is a big problem for this particular sector. And I don't imagine we can get into too much detail around it. But as you already outlined, these companies will exist for kind of a year or so. Then they will liquidate and without paying their debts to HMRC. And then HMRC can't go after the original directors of the business because they're not traceable
you've always got this concept of limited liability in a company, and of course once a company is struck off, it doesn't exist anymore, and that leaves HMRC with a big problem. No company to chase. The contractor is the only one that the worker is the only one that is very easy to find, because actually they've been very compliant. They've let HMRC know where they live, they've let HMRC know that they can be found and all of that. Well, someone sitting in the Isle of Man who is controlling one of these umbrellas folds it, starts up the next day and calls it, you know, non-compliant umbrella number two. And there's another telltale sign. You know, if you're constantly being moved from umbrella to umbrella every 12 months, why? Because most legitimate umbrellas, compliant umbrellas in the market, will have a trading history that spans 3, 4, 5, 6 years and longer. If you're being moved every 12 months, there's probably a very good reason for that.
There isn't a logical sense to do that, is there? And the other point I was just going to make while you were talking then was that often the directors of these schemes, or the promoters, or the ultimate beneficial owners of these schemes, they're often very difficult to track down, aren't they? We were chatting before the show about someone who's well known in the industry as being behind these schemes, but yet HMRC haven't managed to track them down, and that's partly because they're very clever. They ensure that they're not directly, that there's no paper trail to them, and I think that does make it quite difficult for HMRC, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no secret that you can register anyone as a director at Company House. And there's no checks done when you do that. So quite often you come across people who are directors of 40, 50 companies. Now, they might be a very successful business person and able to do that. I suspect what reality is that they are what we would call a shadow director, and the beneficial owner is someone behind them and controlling things from behind the scenes. But you're right, it creates these tangled webs that are very hard to unscramble and find who is behind, ultimately, who is the one profiting from it.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, that's sort of a small digression. It's probably not going to help our listeners massively unless any listeners want to spend their time digging behind company structures on Companies House, which sorts of things you and I might do for fun, but but maybe not our listeners.
Going down the YouTube rabbit hole, isn't it? You start with one and before you know it, You're 2 hours later and you're not really sure what you've done with your time.
Exactly. There's a Sunday afternoon gone just there. or is that just me? I don't know. So in terms of other kind of schemes, so, I mean, I think the basics around the loan schemes and that sort of thing is two different portions of pay, and they're not both going through PAYE. I think that is the main point, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And HMRC recently issued a spotlight warning about another type of umbrella that I wanted to briefly cover on this episode as well, which is mini umbrella. And can you talk us through really the basics of what mini umbrella is and how people might be able to identify if they are in one?
Yeah, absolutely. So a mini umbrella company, an MUC, it's essentially an umbrella broken down into a number of different umbrella companies. Now, you might ask, what's the reason for doing that? If you're a small business, there are certain grants and exemptions you can take advantage of, and in the main, the ones they're looking to take advantage of here is the flat rate VAT scheme, which can be very advantageous, and also the employment allowances. If you only have a certain number of employees and you're below a certain turnover, you can get allowances that you can claim, which if they were this one big massive umbrella, they wouldn't be able to claim. So effectively, they set up... I mean, you've seen it, Julia. I mean, it could be 10, 20, 30 different umbrellas. But the aim ultimately is to kind of create this fictional world where they're all little small businesses. Now, I guess some people would ask, is there anything wrong in doing that? Yeah, there is, because when you look at these allowances and how you qualify and that, it does say that in the main, if you have a similar type business operating, they should be classed as one business. Mm-hmm. So what you'll find at Company House is they will describe them not really as what they are. They'll, you know, if this is an employment agency, it might say it's, you know, manufacturer of kids' clothes or something like that. Is trying to throw HMRC off the trail. Now I do know that HMRC very much are taking the view that this is criminal activity. We're not talking tax avoidance here. We're talking tax evasion and criminal. And I don't think particularly, I mean, clearly we're talking about the masterminds controlling these companies as the ones that are creating that criminal activity. And I'm not looking to criminalise anyone that works for them. But clearly you don't want to be involved in that kind of enterprise. So, you know, if you do think you are, then you really, again, should be thinking about leaving and joining a compliant umbrella.
Yeah, and I think one of the hallmarks that you might find is that if you... similar to what we've already said, actually, is that if you are often changed from one umbrella to another, and it's still kind of part of the same group, that could be an indicator, couldn't it? Because if their turnover is getting to a level where they would have to pay more VAT than they were before, then they would obviously need to form a new company and move you into it. Have I understood that correctly?
Yeah, absolutely. I call it balancing the books. So basically, they've looked at it. They've said, our turnover is getting too big. We need to strip some people out of this. Maybe cut some of the higher paid ones. We'll put them into a new umbrella, balance the books out, and then we can all claim the VAT and the allowance. Absolutely. That is one of the ways you can identify it. Yeah. Again, we're back to that. There's no real sound business reason behind doing it that you can see. Mm-hmm. Probably worth just questioning, why would someone go to all of that hassle? Yeah.
And would they have a different payroll reference number then for each new company that's set up?
Yeah, they would have a separate payroll scheme for each one. Again, keeping those false walls up, pretending that they're not related in any sort of way. And they may have a director in common, but more likely, if you looked at Companies House, they would have different directors, again, trying to break that connection. I would go back to, if you do look and you see a director that's, you know, director of 50, 40, 30 companies that don't appear to really be in the same industry, probably start to ask questions about what's going on.
Yes. So I suppose this is still coming back to that common theme of checking your pay slips and, you know, even to the extent of looking out for a change in payroll reference number or company name, which I suppose is a bit of a pain, isn't it, to have to think of these things? And especially when you're, you know, a contractor or an agency worker and you just kind of want to be paid. But I suppose that there are these hallmarks there just to be aware of them, aren't there?
I think so. Just be aware of them. I mean, we're not saying, you know, every umbrella should be quite. I mean, you will clearly, you know, look at reviews. You'll have referrals, and I'm sure there will be names that, you know, are well known as being compliant umbrellas. Mm. I think it's more when you look at the ones that you're not too familiar with. Perhaps you've been enticed into it, or perhaps you've been pointed towards it, and it wasn't one that you naturally sort of made a decision to seek out. And you are seeing some things that, okay, there's some reasonable explanations given to me, but all in all, is it sounding plausible? Mm. And it's just that kind of, just that internal conversation to just say, okay, I'm not comfortable, and therefore I need to do a bit of digging.
Yeah. And I think sometimes also people's friends and colleagues can recommend them to schemes. And sometimes those individuals are given financial incentives to recommend the scheme to their friends and colleagues. So it's be slightly wary of that. If Joe Blogs says, this is my umbrella, you could just maybe say, look, Joe, what are you getting out of this? You know,
absolutely. I mean, listen, if Joe Blogs, you ask Joe Blogs, if there's an umbrella he knows of and he gives you one, great. If Joe Blogs is coming around and telling everyone, use this umbrella, probably wonder what Joe Blogs is getting out of it. And we're not talking small incentives here. I mean, you know, back in the heyday for these guys, shall we say, I mean, they were enticing people with holidays and Rolexes and all sorts of luxury gear for their top scooters. So it's not sort of like a £10 high street voucher to go and spend. It could add up.
And I suppose the reason why these scheme providers can afford to do that is because they're not paying tax properly.
This is it. And this is why a lot of people didn't realise that they're in a scheme, because they're charging a fee. So if they charge 15 to 20% fee, it's very easy for you to believe that that's your tax being paid.
Yeah.
But it's the profit of the provider. And it's only later when HMRC say, actually, you paid like 1%, 2% tax, that you start to go, well, where did all that money go?
Yeah.
And it was profit for the provider.
It's a double whammy, because you think you've paid tax and you probably will then have to pay that again.
Yeah. And, and in the meantime, the promoter has sailed off into the sunset because he's closed that company and started on his next project.
Just before we finish, a quick word about recruitment agencies and where they fit into the mix. A lot of good recruitment agencies have a preferred supplier list where they've done due diligence on the umbrellas that they work with. Is that still kind of how you see things, or do you not get too involved in the recruitment agencies?
I see it because I talk to people obviously who say that, you know, this umbrella was on the preferred supplier list and I picked it or I was pointed towards it or whatever it is. I think from my point of view, agencies have a massive part to play in all of this. That due diligence of their supply chain is crucial. And I would even point them towards the Criminal Finance Act, where, you know, it's an offence, to a corporate offence, to facilitate tax evasion. And so, you know, if you do not secure your supply chain and you do not know exactly who is on your PSL and how they're operating, you are leaving yourself open to criminal sanctions. And HMRC are getting more and more moving towards that kind of criminal comeback rather than using civil powers. So I would encourage any agency to not just look at their preferred supplier list and allow it to just be a stagnant thing. Review it. Check your supply chain. Sure everyone's working compliant. Check some of the pay slips your people are getting. Have a look. Do some due diligence. And if you're not comfortable with it, you need to be seriously considering what you do as an agency.
I think that's a good point. And as I say, a lot of the good recruitment firms are doing this stuff as a matter of course. But I think that there is more to be done with some firms, only because the recruitment consultant is often that individual worker's point of contact, aren't they? So they're kind of in a position of some influence. And if they accidentally or deliberately refer someone to something that turns out to be a scheme, then that's obviously not good for that recruitment firm or that worker. But they're in a position of trust almost. And I think that recruitment firms need to ensure that their own staff teams know about this stuff. And I'm not convinced that everyone does.
No, I'm not convinced everyone does. And I think it should be the very basics of what they do. Reputation is everything. We saw earlier this year when certain firms were taking furlough payments and getting heavily criticised for it, that reputation is very important to the consumer. And if you're not ensuring that your staff are maintaining your reputation in the industry, you're going to have a problem.
And I guess also then the recruitment firm's client's reputation is potentially at risk as well. So that's another extra reason for the whole supply chain to work together on this stuff.
And I very much have the view the whole supply chain does have to be joined up. It does have to have oversight of every part of that supply chain, not just the next link. And only then will we have an industry that is doing its best to ensure the players that don't have the workers' best interests at heart, removed from the chain.
And I think there's quite a lot of stuff going on from the government level of in this sphere, isn't there? I mean, I've seen a few different things coming out of HMRC and Department of Business and others who are sort of trying to get the message out there to firms about the importance of knowing who they're working with in terms of compliance. So I don't want to sound like I'm singing HMRC's praises at all, but they have put out some good stuff lately, haven't they?
They have. I mean, I will be the first one to criticise HMRC for the way they have dealt with loan schemes and various other avoidance schemes over the last 20 years. There's no getting away from that. They have come to a point there where they are still got a lot to do, but are being a lot better at what they're doing. You mentioned the spotlights earlier. Now, I wouldn't recommend everyone subscribe to spotlights because they're not the most fascinating reading if you're not in the industry, but they are early warning signals of what's going on. And they are much more active in trying to ensure compliance at the earliest stage.
Yeah.
So a way to go, but yes, they are coming out with some good information.
It's almost funny for you and I to be in a position of begrudgingly appreciating stuff that HMRC is doing.
It's worse for me as someone that was an HMRC inspector for 20 years to look back and go, okay, not the finest years for the department, but the truth is they have been the finest years for the department. And like I say, I'm not sure we've turned a corner, but things are starting to get a little bit better.
Yeah, and just for people who want to know about this stuff, then my website, iwork.co.uk, I always will publish any latest information from HMRC. So we've got on there stuff around mini umbrella that we've talked about and these loan schemes or disguised remuneration schemes that they're also called. But there's quite a few resources actually out there that people can go to. And if people want to contact you about anything, should I direct them to your website and I'll put this in the notes that go with this episode as well.
I mean, absolutely. You can contact at info@wttconsulting.co.uk. You can visit our website, wttconsulting.co.uk, or you can connect with me individually on LinkedIn.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Perfect. Well, listeners, make sure you do that, because I've known this firm for a while. And as I say, it's a tax advisory firm with morals, which, you know, it doesn't get much better than that, does it? So, well, thank you so much for joining me today, Tom. It's been really, really interesting. And hopefully our listeners have found it really beneficial. I'm sure they will have.
Absolute pleasure, and hope to do it again sometime.
Wonderful.
Thank you for listening to Empowering Agency Workers, hosted by Julia Kermode. For more information on today's discussion, please visit iwork.co.uk, where you can also join our growing community. We hope you enjoyed today's episode, and if you did, then we would love you to subscribe, rate, and review our podcast. We'll be back at the same time next week.